Hello and welcome to the Compliance Week podcast. I'm Joe Mott, staff writer for Compliance Week, and today we'll be looking at the topic of supply chain fraud. Earlier this summer, Hurricane Arthur battered the southern east coast, and hurricane season is well underway. So what's the connection between stormy weather and supply chain fraud? There may be more than you think, according to Mark Pearson and Larry Kivett, members of Deloitte's supply chain forensics team. We asked Kivett to explain the connection between bad weather and fraud.
You know, hurricanes and really any kind of natural disaster, since we aren't that far removed from some of the winter storms that we had on the East Coast this past year, when you're talking about natural disasters, what they really share in common is that they disrupt what we see to be the normal supply chain processes, and they place a lot of stress on supply chain systems. Anytime you're talking about stress to a system or occurrences that are outside of the normal course of business and controls are disrupted, there's inherently going to be an increased susceptibility to fraud. And particularly in addition to that, fraudsters seek these out. Natural disasters are opportunities for fraudsters to try and take advantage of a situation because they understand that these types of events really present a unique opportunity. They know that controls get disrupted, that there's a limited amount of oversight around approval processes, that accounting records may not be as robust as they are in the normal supply chain process. And so as a result, they really seek out opportunities in order to be able to take advantage of those situations.
It seems that companies may be more concerned about supply chain disruption when bad weather rears its head, as opposed to keeping an eye peeled for fraud. We pose that question to Kivett.
You're right. They certainly do need to keep an eye on fraud as they're dealing not only with supply chain disruption, but also their ongoing operations. You know, you think about fraud in a natural disaster kind of context, some of the different scenarios that we see involve labor, involve materials. If we take labor as a potential example, there you're talking about fraudulent billings associated with cleanup as an example, and that could cover a variety of different circumstances. Some of the schemes that we've seen include ghost labor, where fraudsters are billing for people that actually are never on site and don't perform any services. Could also have shifts in labor, and so an example of that could be somebody that starts out as a day laborer doing cleanup work, and then they shift to more of a supervisory role, and then they shift back into a different role, all at increased billing rates that are over and above the work that they're actually performing. And some other things that we commonly see are excessive overtime charges, excessive hours incurred during the day. And then obviously, anytime you're talking about labor, you've got your travel and other related expenses associated with them that also get incorporated into the fraud schemes as well.
Research by Pearson and Kivett showed that 28% of companies that they surveyed had no program in place to prevent supply chain fraud. It seems an incredible statistic, and we asked Pearson to explain a little bit about that finding.
When you think about the number of companies that have supply chains, obviously everybody does, and in most companies except law firms or other professional services, accounts payable and supply chains tend to be the largest cost that passes through their financial statements. You would think that there would be a much higher rate of respondents that would indicate that they do in fact have these kinds of programs in place. What we find, however, is that most companies mimic a lot of human behavior. What I mean by that is that as humans, we're pre-programmed to see the best in people and not to sort of wonder, you know, if somebody is living up to their end of the bargain, which we find in a lot of cases. It's the companies that tend to be the most ethically sound and have really good programs and policies in place themselves, and they expect that their business partners are doing the same when, in fact, a lot of them aren't. And so, you know, one of the things that's always surprising to me is when I go out and I'm speaking with, whether it's a chief compliance officer or general counsel or someone else charged with overseeing risks throughout the organization, most of the companies that aren't, in fact, assuming that this is happening somewhere within their supply chain tend to be those organizations that I would say have a really strong tone at the top and a good culture around ethical behavior.
We asked Pearson to explain a little bit more about what their research reveals about supply chain fraud.
The one thing I would say about some of the research that we've done, that kind of gets back to the last question, I think, a little bit, is that almost a third of the respondents that we polled indicated that their company had experienced fraud, waste, or abuse over the last 12 months within their supply chain. And so when you couple that with sort of the last comment or the comment about, you know, why don't companies spend more time looking at supply chain and looking for fraud, waste, or abuse, there's a bit of a there's a bit of friction there. It doesn't make sense. And I think, again, a lot of that is the sort of it can't happen to me sort of mindset, right? The fact that it might be happening to someone else. And that when folks that aren't that don't have a lot of experience within compliance, or like Larry and myself in doing investigations, view a transaction or view a relationship, they don't automatically think like we do, which is, well, what's the risk of fraud? Business people in general and within procurement and AP, I would say included, tend to, again, assume that people are as ethical as they are, assume that people are living up to their end of the bargain, when in fact we counsel companies not to assume that everybody is out to defraud you, but be smart about, you know, about guarding your supply chain. Understand that there are people out there, like Larry said earlier, that are looking to take advantage of your organization during a hurricane, during, as Larry mentioned, whether it's a tornado or it's a winter storm, something that would be a devastating impact where there's going to be additional spend for labor, for materials, in order to rebuild or reconstruct a plant or an office or a headquarters. You know, all of these things really present a lot of opportunities for fraudsters to step in and take advantage of unsuspecting companies.
Do they have any advice for companies as they look to shore up their fraud prevention programs or improve programs that are already in place? Pearson started off.
What we coach companies to think about, the first thing is really to take an inward look at their supply chain, to really know their supply chain. How do you do that? You do that a couple of different ways, one of which is to conduct appropriate supply chain due diligence. Know who you're doing business with. Identify potential conflicts of interest within your own company. The third thing under that sort of know your supply chain recommendation is to establish the financial stability and, I would say, the compliance and ethics stability of your suppliers as well. And you really do that through having people who are trained in compliance and investigations and anti-fraud kind of work, interact and interview and get to know some of those key suppliers so you can make some kind of a judgment or evaluation of that. The second thing is really monitoring the supply chain process itself. So after you've sort of set up that firewall or that perimeter, which is, okay, who are we going to let into our supply chain? It's not enough to say, okay, we've done the diligence up front, they're all good people, and we can go about our business. You really need to kind of take a step back, Joe, and look at it from the perspective of, okay, we've done our best to shield who we let into our business in our supply chain, but we need to verify that people are, in fact, conducting themselves as we would expect them to conduct themselves and aren't at all taking advantage of our company, again, whether it's due to fraud, waste, or abuse, as we see so many times within our companies. The sort of last thing that I would say on this topic, and then I'll turn it over to you, Larry, to see if you have any thoughts or comments, is that there's no substitute for monitoring. There's no substitute for being able to go back and verify. And it's, you know, it's an old saying that I think is attributed to Ronald Reagan, but I think it's absolutely true, and it's trust but verify. It's not a matter of, you know, you're going to do a forensic vendor audit because you don't trust a supplier necessarily. It's just to maintain that your trust is well placed in that particular supplier. And what we find is that most suppliers are absolutely fine with a fact-finding kind of mission like that to verify that what's been invoiced is in fact correct and should have been invoiced.
Kivett also shared his thoughts.
When you think about areas of improvement for supply chain monitoring around fraud, waste, and abuse, the use of data analytics is definitely an area where we could see improvement. Interestingly, from the research that we did, one of the findings that we had that collectively Mark and I were surprised by, quite frankly, was that less than 10% of respondents indicated that their organizations use data analytics to mitigate fraud, waste, and abuse within their supply chains. So while there's a lot of focus on the use of data and analytics as it relates to supply chain optimization and efficiencies and things like that, it seems like the focus of using that data to analyze for fraud, waste, and abuse is a bit lacking. And so certainly that would be an area for improvement, because I think based on Mark and I's experience, the one thing that we could say without a doubt is that within any kind of a natural disaster situation, the reality is that fraud will occur. It's just a question of whether or not the company will be able to defend themselves and whether or not they'll be able to identify it in fairly short order in order to prevent or limit the loss that they'll have associated with that.
We asked Pearson and Kivett to expound upon the idea of bad weather being connected to supply chain fraud. Pearson started off.
Where we say that most fraud, waste, and abuse within supply chains tends to be within labor expenses, as Larry talked about earlier. One of the other things, when you think about, okay, there's quantitative risk in schemes, and there's also qualitative risks in schemes. So a $10,000 overspend might not be material to anyone. However, if it's a $10,000 payment to a government employee, for example, in order to get an inspector out today versus tomorrow or something like that, that becomes very problematic from a variety of different different reasons. And so, you know, part of when we think about hurricane season and we think about other natural disasters or man-made disasters, that kind of filters into the issue about supply chain, because a lot of spend is being forced through or pushed through an already existing supply chain, which in a lot of cases it can't scale appropriately from in terms of segregation of duties, in terms of handling two times the volume of invoices that they normally would, for example. And as a result, sometimes people try to cut corners, and sometimes they do it with all the best intentions. However, you know, what we find a lot of times is that people take advantage of the system for their own personal gain.
Kivett elaborated on what their research found.
Fraudsters understand that in these types of natural disaster situations, that on-site approval for or oversight for labor and workers and whether material was delivered and things like that tends to be minimal and or lacking. So that first line of defense that companies typically have around authorization and receipt of goods, proving up that documentation oftentimes is difficult in a natural disaster response situation. And then fraudsters also understand that the back-end accounting records may be incomplete, and those in combination present a very good opportunity for them to be successful in perpetrating their fraud, and then also they understand that it minimizes their overall risk of potentially being caught.
That's all for today's podcast. I'd like to thank you for listening. This is Joe Mont, staff writer for Compliance Week, and I hope you will join us again next time.